number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. You know what they say.
You know what they say. See a broad to get that booty act. Leg it down. Smack on the ankle.
Night time. You know the night it's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
If we die, we die together.
And YahooSportsRadio.com. Tony D with you. Getting interactive, recapping everything that's going down. And giving you your first chance to react. Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Yahoo Sports Radio.
Is now.
Oh, got to be.
This is what we do. From the Quick and Loan Studios, here's Tony D.
All right, so the Cincinnati Bengals and the Denver Broncos played a pretty good one on Monday Night Football. We'll be breaking that down for you coming up in this hour. Thanks for joining us. A lot to get to, a lot of different stuff to get to. We're going to be got NBA, the Golden State Warriors win again. We've got the college football playoff coming up on New Year's Eve. We've got bowl games going on. We've got the NFL, of course, Major League Baseball, or Aroldis Chapman going to the Yankees. What cost to the Yankees? They didn't give up a lot for them, but they're going to have to take an off-the-field kind of hit based on the public relations. 800-777-2907 is the number. Last hour, we were talking about the Broncos. We were talking about how Brock Osweiler is now leading this team and Peyton Manning, and where are the Broncos in terms of their quarterback. And a point that I've been making tonight is, and I'm going to reiterate this, that the AFC really is more wide open than people think. And a lot of it has to do with just the injuries that have really plagued a lot of the teams and a lot of the uncertainty about teams. So we're either going to, you're either going to get teams that are beat up enough to be vulnerable, or is that kind of play going to work in the playoffs kind of thing? Yeah, I'll give you an example. The Kansas City Chiefs might be the most dangerous team in the NFL, but they also might be a first round exit team. I don't know. If their style of play is playoff suitable. Because sometimes in the playoffs, you get out of what makes you good. You're forced to play the type of games that you don't normally play. The Chiefs.
Where he was talking was the Chiefs and how wide open this is in the AFC with the Broncos, Chiefs, with all the injuries to all these teams, that they will, you know, they'll all be fighting for the same spot. But we'll come back and we'll get back with Tony and oh, there he is. All right. He is back.
I had a little glitch in the setup. So, what I was saying before was that each team there's enough of an issue with each team that it becomes wide open. And I was bringing up Kansas City. Look, Kansas City plays games that are like 17-14, 20-17. That's the kind of games they like. I think Frank Schwab at Yahoo Sports, we talked to him yesterday, and he said something about Kansas. Like, unless you're a fan, they're not the team you run to see. They're not the, when you see them on your you know, list of games that you get, whether you get the Sunday ticket or maybe locally or whatever, they're not the game you go, oh, yeah, Kansas City and Cleveland. I check that one out. They're not an eye-popping team. That doesn't mean they can't win a Super Bowl. Doesn't mean they can't win the AFC. But I'm as perplexed with them as I am with the Jets. And I like the Jets. But the Jets are flawed too. There's enough flaws with everybody in the AFC that it becomes more wide open. Now you may say, yeah, but isn't that like that with everybody? Not really. When you look at the NFC, for example. I mean, sure. We've seen a 9-7 Giants team go to a Super Bowl, 10-6 Giants team go to a Super Bowl. Sure. But when you look at the Arizona Cardinals and the Carolina Panthers, if you're a team that's got a couple of things going wrong with it, are you going to run through that sort of juggernaut to get to the Super Bowl? It's going to be much more difficult. In the AFC, I'm not kidding. Put them all in a hat, pick a name out, and I wouldn't be surprised if any of these teams are in the Super Bowl. And that includes the Denver Broncos. Because I see a football team over the last couple of weeks that can't score in certain halves, can't score in long stretches. But that defense has been solid. That defense is good. And if they can get a running game going, Osweiler has been good enough as a quarterback. He's good enough as a quarterback to make enough happen to advance. The Patriots get healthy, all bets are off. All bets are off. Lord knows. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that we watched a New England Patriots team that really shouldn't have been anywhere near an AFC title game get to an AFC title game against the Broncos and almost won that game. Could have won that game. They were real beat up. No Gronkowski, beat up in a lot of other places. Yet, if they get healthy, then you know all bets are off on this.
If you had to choose right now, who would you pick?
I'd probably take the Patriots.
Patriots.
Yeah. But, I mean, look, like I want it. Houston Texans are a perfect example, right? I'd love to say, yeah, Houston can get in and make a run. I don't know, right? I with Brian Hoyer, maybe, sure, right? Defense is good, sure. But when I look at teams like New England, I know what I can get if I get them healthy. Right. If I get them healthy, they're very good. If I get other teams fully healthy, no, I'm not as high.
The crazy thing is, in the AFC, you look at all the defenses outside of probably New England, but they can also play as a really good unit when they're completely healthy. But the other five teams that be in have extremely good defenses.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I know. By the way, in the when Renault said the Steelers, it would be hard to get into the playoffs, he was right. Well, they have to beat the Browns. The Jets got to go to Buffalo to beat Rex Ryan. Is Rex Ryan really going to rally the troops? Is he going to rally the Bills enough to emotionally overcome a team that has to win?
I wake up today, look at Twitter on my phone. First thing I see on Twitter is the Bills are preparing for their Super Bowl against the Jets.
Oh God, they must be 100% behind him.
I could see Rex Ryan actually trying to like take his team and being like, you know what, if you don't win, you're all running sprints for the next 3 months straight, nonstop.
I could see Rex Ryan going, let me tell you a story. But a guy had a dream. And I lived that dream. But that dream got taken away from me. I don't ask you to play for yourselves. Give me one game for me. Just one game for me. I'll never ask this again.
He's going to have like Muhammad Ali and Stallone playing as Rocky, coming in the locker room before the game, trying to get these guys ready to go.
Exactly. Is this on? Because it's about ready to get on. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
We're going to be bullies.
We're going to be bullies.
We're going to be bullies. Yeah, sure. Oh, please, Rex Ryan. Just one time get it right, man. One time. Oh, and then Johnny Manziel might have a great game and beat the Steelers. So what do I care? I saw a great line in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, I think it was, today, that said the Steelers went from the team nobody wants to face in the playoffs to the team nobody's going to have to face in the playoffs.
Did you see Johnny Manziel put out another video?
I know. And then Mike Pettine, God bless him. You could tell he wanted to do something, but he realized I can't overreact.
Right.
And make this a bigger story than it already is. But I wanted to pounce on this so badly. Like, guys, you're going to have to make a decision on Manziel because you can't do this anymore. Do this anymore.
This kid is officially my favorite player in the league.
He totally is just... He's at holiday parties and the Browns are like, this is a concern. We don't know. You know, he's just having fun. He's out there doing what he's doing. I don't know. We're going to have to discuss this. I just want to reach out to the Browns and go, look, save yourself the trouble and just cut the kid. Right. All right? Because he ain't changing. You ain't changing him. And you ain't changing your opinion on him. So let's just cut the middleman and let him go. Because this is not working.
We all know Jerry will bring him in and be Jerry like, he can be whoever the hell he wants to be.
You want
to
party on the weekends? I don't care. Just show up for game time and be good.
If Tony Romo gets hurt, be ready to play.
We ain't into character development here in Dallas. We don't care about you growing as a human being.
Right.
Just come to win games. You want to personal growth on your own time. Become a better father, person, kid, I don't care. Just show up to practice and play.
If we can handle Randy Gregory and Greg Hardy.
Yeah, we're good.
Come on, Johnny.
Mike, if Mike Pettine had Greg Hardy, he'd lose his mind.
Oh, gosh.
All right?
Oh, he wouldn't. He would quit, like, game one.
Can't take Manziel sipping some eggnog at a party? Right. I haven't even seen the video, so I shouldn't comment, but I kid. All right, 800-777-2907. All right, coming up next, something we're going to do for the week, and I want to get your thoughts on this. Hit us up on Twitter or hit us up with a call. I want to ask today, and we're going to do different topics throughout the week to kind of celebrate the end of the year. What was the best story of 2015 for you? What was the story that captivated you the most? When you look back on 2015, the one that made the impact, and I want the best one, not the negative one, not the one that made you, you know, the team lost or this story drove me crazy, I hated hearing about it every day, but the one that made you say, I love sports, and that's the reason I love sports, because, man, that made me feel great, and nothing else could made me feel that good. I want those kind of stories next. It's 800-777-2907. Paul Konendyk will join us. We'll talk Michigan State at the bottom of the hour, but the best stories of 2015, I got a couple next. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Well, let's be honest. If you're a sports fan, you deal with a lot of the low stuff that comes with the sport, right? All the off-the-field issues, domestic violence creeps into the sports world, off-the-field fights and arguments and contracts and teams moving and all of these things that you kind of have to deal with. The allegations of cheating and HGH or Deflategate or whatnot. There are a lot of times where being a sports fan, you got to deal with the dark, dark stuff of life that sort of creeps in. But every now and then, and for the most part, we get these moments that are awesome, that we just say, you know what, man, I do not know how non-sports fans get this same kind of feeling. Whether it's your team winning a championship or just watching some great performance, the unscripted drama of sports is great. I ask my friends all the time. I have friends who don't like sports at all, don't care who wins the Super Bowl or whatnot. And I go, I respect that. I completely respect that. But I also ask them, where do you get your unscripted highs and lows? Because it's one thing to go to a movie or an opera or a play or something, but that's scripted. That's designed to get you. A Monday Night Football game can be a 35-0 blowout. It could be a 20-17 overtime thriller. Where do you get the unscripted highs and lows of your life? So I'm asking this question as we get ready to close out 2015. What were the stories that made you go, man, that was the best? It doesn't necessarily have to be with your team, but a moment that captivated you like nothing else in sports. And I don't, you know, not the bad stuff, the good stuff. Steven on Twitter, my best story, NASCAR and Jeff Gordon in his final race at Martinsville pulls off a late pass to win to lock it into the chase. I thought that was great, especially what he's meant to the sport. Him getting into the chase, not only getting into the chase, but, getting into, like you said, winning that race at Martinsville and getting into the homestead and being a chance for a championship in his final run. And also Kyle Busch breaking his leg and being out and coming back and winning the championship. Adam, what's yours?
I would say I've got two. It's the emergence of Steph Curry and the Warriors.
Yeah.
As, you know, pretty much the team in the NBA with, you know, maybe a couple teams chasing him, but I mean, Steph Curry's turned into just an outstanding player, and it's almost like people don't realize the kid's already 27. I mean, he's been in the league a while, and he worked his butt off to get to where he is now, and, you know, it finally paid off, and it's paid off huge for him. And then the other one is Jordan Spieth. I mean, just being able to watch what he did at such a young age. I mean, he was just in high school a few years ago. To do what he did was incredible.
I had to narrow it down, and I there were a lot of these great moments. Jordan Spieth, and I go back to, okay, that Monday of the British Open, it was my first day of vacation, and I wanted to watch that in its entirety, the final round that was played on the Monday at St. Andrews,
yeah,
like no other sporting event of the year. It was equal to any other sporting event I wanted to see. I had to see if this kid was going to pull this off. I couldn't wait to watch it. I woke up, couldn't wait to turn it on, to watch his pursuit of this. And I was captivated by his play. I was, because I was 21, and I would have, I would you know, played golf, and I always dreamed of winning a Masters, but never at 21, right? Like, you don't picture at 21 how you would handle winning a green jacket. And then to cap it off by winning a U.S. Open. And then he goes to the British Open, and all the eyes are on him, and he doesn't disappoint. He's one shot out of a playoff, making a bogey on 17. But for the rest of the 71 holes that he played, he was great. My other one was American Pharoah winning the Triple Crown. Because even though I'm not a huge horse racing guy, I love seeing history. I love it. And to see something that every time we'd have a horse win the first two legs and not be able to close it out at the Belmont, you would start hearing people saying, I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen. And realizing that it was a big deal to people when the sport was at its peak. When the sport was, you know, there was a time where boxing and horse racing were the lead dogs in the sports world, including in baseball in there as well. Winning a Triple Crown was a big deal. And we were going this whole time without seeing it. And how many people were just genuinely excited that this horse did it, even if they have nothing to do with the sport or watching the sport? I thought it was great. I thought it was a huge moment. But I like your Steph Curry stuff, because the Golden State Warriors were extremely likable. Extremely likable. And even though there was a feeling of LeBron trying desperately to give a city a championship that it had not had in a very, very long time, the Warriors were a very likable team. It's hard to root against them. But the emergence of Steph Curry, that even carries over into this season. I mean, let's be honest, Adam. We tear people down. Yeah. You can only go so high in this country before we start tearing you down. And yet, that has not seemed to touch Steph Curry at all. He's genuinely liked.
I mean, it actually almost seems like the Warriors are becoming more likable while they're continuing to get better as a team. I mean, Draymond Green is becoming a superstar. You know, guys like Festus Ezeli and Sean Livingston are getting better, it seems. So it's just like, it's almost just not fair.
We had a conversation. We had a conversation about the 96 Bulls against this team. Right, or the
72-10, yeah.
The 72-10 team. And we both said, look, it's two different styles of basketball, and probably the physicality of those both teams would beat this Warriors team, although they shoot better, this team. People would never want to go down the road of, he's as good as Jordan. That's almost like you can't make that conversation. But people are saying this is one of the best teams to ever play. And they're doing it because what they're watching from this team this year has been remarkable. We'll continue it throughout the show tonight. Your thoughts on the best story of 2015. But coming up next, Michigan State, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Well, coming up on New Year's Eve, we have got the college football playoffs and the Cotton Bowl in Dallas. We'll have the Alabama Crimson Tide taking on Michigan State. And remember last year, Alabama played another team out of the Big Ten. Well, now it's Michigan State. We're going to get a look inside the Spartans with Paul Konendike from Rivals.com. He joins us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. How are you, my friend?
Hey, it's good to be here, and it's exciting to be going back to Dallas and watching what should be another great game between Michigan State and another power program like Alabama.
All right, so the Spartans come into this game as the Big Ten champs. Now, I want to get an idea, your initial thought on the matchup against Alabama. What is the matchup that sticks out to you in terms of offense versus defense, or certain player versus another player that sticks out to you in this game?
Well, I think the thing that sticks out to me is that this is, in a lot of ways, strength versus strength. You've got an Alabama run game, which is dynamic with Heisman Trophy winner Derek Henry, and you've got a Michigan State team that, you know, really, other than Michigan State as a program, other than Alabama, there aren't too many teams out there that have historically, you know, in the last decade, shut down the run like Michigan State. I think Michigan State and Alabama are tied for the most number of times in the last 10 years that they've held opponents to 50 yards or less rushing on the ground. So you've got a powerful Bama rushing attack against a Michigan State rushing defense that's pretty darn stout in his, shut down Oregon's rushing game, shut down Ohio State's running game, and they're going to have their hands full, obviously, with Alabama. But that's the big matchup that stands out to me. And I think the the matchup that is kind of goes unnoticed in this is, you know, everyone talks about the front seven for Michigan State going up against the O-line and the running attack, but I think for Michigan State in this game defensively, what they're going to have to do is not get kind of lulled into that, we got to stop with the run, we got to stop their run, and forget about the passing game. You know, I know Jake Coker's not, you know, he's not as good as some of the past Alabama quarterbacks, but I think he can throw the deep ball a little bit, and he's been much better in the second half of the season, you know, avoiding some of those bonehead interceptions, you know, that he did throw early on while he was getting acclimated. So I think Michigan State can't get lulled into, hey, we've got to stop the run at all costs and get beat by the deep ball, because that has been a weakness this year.
In terms of the way out the Michigan State line is, we've seen this in the SEC for Alabama, is Derrick Henry can be controlled a little bit early in a game, but as the game progresses and that Alabama offensive line starts making some holes, that's when this big running back really hits you and then can take off and really eat up yardage towards the end of the game. Is Michigan State's offensive defensive line and linebackers athletic enough to sort of take a pounding but then keep going towards an end of a game to sort of handle what Henry will deliver at an end of a game?
I don't know if it has to do with athleticism. I think it has to do with depth and toughness. I think Michigan State has both of them in the front seven. And really, you look at Michigan State, their program on defense, it's built to stop the run. I think that's becoming rarer in college football, where everyone is like focused on you know, red zone defense exclusively. Michigan State's a power football team. You know, we've heard this in the past, you know, about Michigan State, whenever they've gone up against a program that runs the football really well. You know, I think this was one of the narratives against going to the Rose Bowl game a couple years ago against Stanford. You know, Michigan State hasn't seen the offensive line or running attack like Stanford has. You're hearing the same thing this year. Now, I think this Alabama, you know, running attack is better than what Michigan State faced with against Stanford. But Stanford had a good offensive line this year, that year. Michigan State's defensive line is far better now than it was a couple of years ago. And I think the thing that sets it apart is you've got experience with senior interior defensive linemen, and you've got depth. You know, you've got young guys rising on the D-line. They rotate a lot of guys. So there's experience, depth, rising guys, and I think toughness. And I think there's, you know, there's been the silver lining this year with some of the injuries that Michigan State has sustained throughout the program is young players have gotten experience. And as those older players have gotten back into their traditional positions, they've been backed up with quality depth by guys that have played before. So I think that's going to be something to watch. I'm not sure Alabama has gone up against a defensive line maybe as deep as Michigan State. So that's something to watch. But certainly, you know, the thing about Derrick Henry is, you know, he might have a 2 or 3 yard game, but he's always falling forward. So it is kind of a blunt force type of attack. And, you know, it does wear on a team, on a defense, especially if they can't move the ball and buy their own defense sometime by possessing the ball. That's going to be key for Michigan State as well on offense, possessing the ball, helping out their defense, and keeping guys fresh.
Paul Konendike joins us, Rivals.com, on Michigan State facing Alabama at the Cotton Bowl on New Year's Eve. The numbers indicate that it's the Michigan State offense is somewhat balanced, but give me an idea, what kind of offense is Michigan State?
Well, it's been different throughout the year, and a lot of that has had to do with injuries. You know, earlier in the year, you did not see the running game because, you know, offensive line were hurt left and right, and the game was kind of on Connor Cook's shoulders. You know, with Connor Cook being injured late in the season, in offensive linemen coming back from injury, you've seen the ground game take over. So the offense has been, kind of hit and miss at times. Like I said, injuries had a lot to do with it, but they've shown that they can win in different ways. In this game, though, I think the offense is going to have to be balanced. They're going to have to throw the ball. They're going to have to get some of those big plays that Connor Cook had earlier in the year when he was going through all those 300-yard games until his shoulder injury. And they're also going to have some of the grinded out, the tough running that we've seen in the second half of the season in games like the game against Iowa or the game at Ohio State, where Michigan State, surprised everyone by putting 200 yards plus on the ground against Ohio State without a passing game.
In terms of where you see Alabama, is there anything that people who cover Michigan State and have looked at this matchup, is there anything about Alabama that seems to be an advantage for Michigan State in the game?
Well, I don't know if there's anything I don't think if there's anything that you look at with Alabama and you say, hey, that's a weakness. You know, Dave Warner, Michigan State's co-offensive coordinator, said today, earlier, or yesterday, that, you know, sometimes they give up some deep balls, but, you know, you don't want to have your quarterback sitting in there waiting for double, you know, double routes and some deep stuff to open up because you're going to get him killed. So, you know, anything that looks like a weakness out there, I don't think there's anything that Michigan State can really exploit. But, you know, I don't think there's something, I don't think this is a gimmick game. This is a game where, you know, Michigan State's going to have to do what it's done the last few years. And, you know, I think one stat that jumped out to me is how well Michigan State has played in top 10 matchups, you know, since 2013. I think they're 6-1. And this will be a big test for both teams. You know, Michigan State's finished top 5 the last 2 years. This senior class has won a lot of games, you know, has won 4 straight bowl games, and it will be interesting to see if they can do that again. But this is going to be an interesting matchup and quite a bit different than last year's Cotton Bowl, where you had Michigan State going up against a high-powered spread attack in Baylor. So completely different type of team than they saw last year.
I ask this because in the SEC, quarterback play was a little bit down, but one of the better quarterbacks was Chad Kelly out of Ole Miss, who was able to go to Tuscaloosa and win. Is there any similarities between him and what Connor Cook does through the air?
Well, I think one of the things you look at the Ole Miss quarterback, he's got a strong arm, but he wasn't very smart. I mean, I don't want to put him down too much, but Connor Cook's a different caliber quarterback than him. You know, Connor Cook's a complete package. He's got the arm strength and he's got the intelligence. He can make checks at the line of scrimmage. So I think that's something that he has. I mean, the big question mark with Connor Cook is, you know, where is the shoulder at? You know, all indications are that he's doing well, but all it takes is one 300-pounder hitting you in that shoulder and it's gone. So, you know, I think if Connor Cook if he is close to 100%, if he's as close to where he was, you know, before the injury, then I think Michigan State can get some stuff done downfield. He's accurate. You know, he can buy some time with his feet. That's another thing I think, you know, Michigan State might have to get from him, much like, you know, Kirk Cousins back in the 2012 Outback Bowl. Never seen him run before. And then, you know, he got some yardage on the ground against Georgia, and it proved key for Michigan State winning that game. You know, Connor Cook's not a guy that likes to run by design, but he's a guy that has the athleticism to get some things done, extend plays with his feet, and he might have to against this NFL-caliber defensive line from Alabama.
So let's get to the offensive line for Michigan State. How well is it played this year?
Well, again, I mean, that's where injuries hit the most for Michigan State. But I think in the last 5 games of the season, you've seen Michigan State come together as an offensive line and do some really good things. I think, you know, kind of the crowning, defining moment for that group was the 22-play drive to win the Big Ten championship against a very good Iowa defense, a very well-coached Iowa defense. And I've never seen anything like that, a 22-play drive, you know, in the 10 years that I've been covering Michigan State. And I think that was indicative of what these guys can do. Now, Iowa was really good on defense. Alabama is going to be even better. But I think these guys are good enough as an offensive line. I mean, you've got at least two high-level pros in Jack Allen, center, Remington Award finalist, and then Jack Conklin, who's probably going to be a first-rounder as a junior this year if he decides to go. But you got those guys, and I don't think they're going to be able to, you know, put up big numbers. They're not going to be able to put up 200 yards, maybe not even 150. But I think what they can do is they can pave the way, you know, for Michigan State to have a threat of a run against Alabama, and that's what they need to have. They need to have a threat of a run. Just get to the point where Alabama can't just pin its ears back and say, okay, they're going to pass here, they're going to pass here. They've got to have the threat of the run, and that's something that, and I expect them to have with the O-line and a pretty good crew of tailbacks.
Paul Konendike again, Rivals.com on Michigan State. Appreciate your time tonight. Thank you so much.
Hey, good to be on.
All right, so there you have it, a preview of the Cotton Bowl between Alabama and Michigan State. This one is just, it's easy to predict what kind of game we're going to get. I just have a hard time predicting what that means, because this is the way I look at it. Alabama is going to want to run the ball. They have Derrick Henry, the Heisman Trophy, and they're not that great downfield. I mean, Jake Coker is not. This isn't AJ McCarron running the offense. I mean, they don't have Julio Jones. They don't have Amari Cooper. They don't have the big wide receivers they've had in the past. So they are more than happy to run the ball. And that's exactly what Michigan State wants them to do, is run the ball. Now, granted, you're dealing with the Heisman Trophy winner. You're dealing with a guy that had almost 2,000 yards rushing. But I don't think this is going to be a high-scoring game. And whenever you get two teams where you go, this team is not going to score very many points, and this team's not going to score very many points, it's hard for me to predict where the ball is going to land. I would say I want Alabama, but then I watched this last year, and I thought Alabama would win by two touchdowns against Ohio State. So stranger things have happened. But I think this is just going to be power for power, like you said. This is going to be a war in the trenches, to use that cliche. But really, that's where the battle is going to be. It really is. Alabama's going to want to run. Michigan State's going to throw it out a little bit. Michigan State's not doesn't have a very good secondary, but I don't think Alabama will be able to exploit it all that much. All right, 800-777-2907 is the number as we continue through the nighttime here on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, so thanks to Paul Konendike on Michigan State. I said earlier, I don't know where the outcome of this game is going to be, given that this will be, I think, a low-scoring game. But I'll lean Alabama, I guess. I want to get to the new direction that college football is heading, by the way. College football wants these games on New Year's Eve. Now, people have said, well, why do you want them on New Year's Eve, these playoff games? There have been bowl games on New Year's Eve. I attended the Peach Bowl, the Chick-fil-A Bowl, 7 or 8 years ago. It was cool. It was in Atlanta. We got out afterwards and hung around downtown, saw the fireworks. But the college football wants to start a new tradition. They want you to remember New Year's Eve and think college football. Now, I'm going to tell you something. It's worked for some sports. There are some sports where there's a holiday and it kind of intertwines with sports. You know, we're already starting to see the NBA doing this with Christmas. They had 5 NBA games on Christmas. So you get up, you unwrap some presents, you're getting ready for Christmas dinner. Your kids are playing with some toys you throw on. Heat Pelicans. Cavaliers Warriors. They want to own Christmas. Thanksgiving. What do we do on Thanksgiving? We gather around and we watch 3 NFL football games and then eat turkey. That holiday in football seems to work fine. NBA and Christmas works for some. College football wants to own New Year's Eve. Does it make sense? Is this the right path? Do they need to do this? I got to tell you something. I make a living doing this. I have to watch. I'm going to be on stroke of midnight Central Time on New Year's Day. So as everybody is watching the ball drop on Times Square with Ryan Seacrest, I'm going to be here live breaking down the games we saw. But I'll tell you this. If I didn't have to be on the air, I would have a hard time telling my wife that on New Year's Eve, I'm going to watch football and not attend an event or a party with her. It's one of the few nights we get to do something pretty awesome. We got 2 kids. It's not like we're running around going on dates or hanging out. I mean, we got busy children. But New Year's Eve was always a time where we could get together and have a few drinks and have a good time and party. It would be very hard if I didn't have this to separate, to tell her, now I'm going to sit and watch college football. How many of you are in that same kind of boat? Especially if you don't have a dog in the fight. You're just watching to watch the football. You're not an Alabama fan. I mean, if you're an Alabama fan, of course. If you're a Michigan State fan, sure. Oklahoma, sure. Actually, the Oklahoma-Clemson game is not so much a big deal. That's earlier in the day. I can survive with that. This night game that leads right up into midnight, that's a difficult time. And college football wants to own it. They want to own that block. I don't know if it's going to work. Because here's the problem with sports. This is what you got to understand about sports. In order to make it work financially, here's what happens. It's like most other things, right? There's going to be a percentage of the population that will watch no matter what. Then there's a percentage of the population that don't watch no matter what. You could throw contests and they will not watch. So you have a group that's already in, you have a group that's already out. Then there's that middle ground, and it's going after the middle ground. You can make that business model pretty much for anything. You can open up a burger joint and be like, there's going to be people that never eat burgers, and there's going to be people always eat burgers. There's people we have to convince to eat burgers. Same thing in sports. So how do you get a majority of that group that's sort of in the middle? They can take it or leave it. They don't need to watch. They will watch if you entice them and it's a good matchup or they've got nothing else to do. How do you get them to change their New Year's Eve pattern so that you can make it worthwhile to your broadcast partner that this is a good time to have these games on television? Now, let me say this. When it comes to ratings on sporting events, I don't care. I'm blown away how many people in my business do. And I'm not talking about direct ratings, like radio stations I've worked at. Yeah, we care about the ratings that we have on. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about television ratings if you're not in the company. I have people who love baseball that get offended when the news comes out that this is the lowest rated World Series of all time. They get offended by that. If you tell them nobody's watching your sport, and if it's a fringe sport like golf, or if it's on the outskirts like tennis or NASCAR or anything else like that, people take offense to that. And I don't know why they take offense to that. What do you care if the majority of people are watching it or not, as long as it's available for you to consume? I was talking about earlier, I watched the British Open. I couldn't wait to see if Jordan Spieth was going to get the third leg of the Grand Slam. Could not wait that Monday to watch it. You know who didn't watch it? Millions of other people who didn't care about golf. I didn't care. I wasn't bothered by it one bit. I didn't care if I put something on Facebook or Twitter and nobody got the reference. I was watching it. I was consuming it. So when it comes to the college football bowl games, if you want to watch it, it's there. And if the ratings are down, the ratings are down. It doesn't matter. But I'm just wondering if it puts you as a sports fan in a bind. If New Year's Eve is kind of that untouched holiday where, no, I do other stuff. I do go out. I do see the downtown fireworks, or I go down and go to the clubs. We get a babysitter and my wife and I finally go out and have a good time. And now sports is asking me to stay home and watch important football games. I don't know if it works or not. I just don't know. The one thing that will happen, and it's like with Thanksgiving. I remember there was only two games on Thanksgiving, and then they threw a third, and I'm like, all right. But my whole life, there was always football on Thanksgiving, my entire life. So I knew no other time where the holiday was being interrupted by football. You can't put football on Thanksgiving. Nobody will watch it. Everybody's eating turkey. I don't remember that time. All I remember is every Thanksgiving when I was a kid, football was on television. I don't even remember a Christmas where the NBA wasn't on TV. And I'm sure if I looked on Wikipedia, it would tell me when the last time there wasn't a major brouhaha over NBA on Christmas Day. But there will be a time, if they keep doing this, in eventually there'll be a generation that will be like, yeah, the college football playoffs are always on New Year's Eve. That's the way it is. That's the tradition. So maybe by then it'll work. I was just a little bothered by it because, like I said, this would be hard for me to get out of. That's a night my wife really enjoys going out, and it would be very difficult for me to go, no, I'm watching yet another sporting event. January 1st, I can watch all I want. Yahoo Sports Radio.